Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
Welcome to this podcast, Season 4, Episode 38. My name is Tim Mitra, and I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined by Jaime Lopez Jr. in Seattle, Washington.
How's it going?
And we don't have Jonathan Kuhlein today. You know what that means, Jaime?
What's that, Tim?
It means that we can get a word in edgewise.
We just make up all sorts of stuff, just fill up the fact check, intentionally say things wrong.
So there's being the wrong thing.
There's a whole Encyclopedia Britannica of fact check to go through.
Alrighty. So we'll start off with the fact check. And so we were talking last week on last week's episode about Shenzhen Convention. And according to Memory Alpha, Shenzhen Convention was an international agreement between the Earth and in the 21st century and the regulated conduct of human genetic research. So in 2024, Dr. Adam Sung was found to have violated the Shenzhen Convention by conducting illegal genetic experiments on ex-soldiers and with Spearhead Operations, a private military organization. As a result, he lost his license and funding and was banned from further research in the field. Now, that is actually the entry about the Shenzhen Convention, and it's also from last week's episode. So I think they just made it up for the show, but now it's canon, right?
Okay, that's something I was wondering about the last time. I was like, man, it sounds like a realistic thing. And when they say, oh, 21st century, I'm like, but that's the century we're in. That's not helpful as to whether it's real or fake.
Yeah. Well, you guys were wondering whether it was like actual genetic research that they were banning, right? I don't know if anybody's actually sort of said, don't make humans, right? Have they?
You know, it's been a while. It's been a minute, right? Because when Dolly, the sheep, was cloned, in the late 90s, early 2000s?
A long time ago.
There was discussions then, and there's been some discussions around using CRISPR, I think, to genetically modify babies. But I don't know that, like, it feels more taboo than it does strictly illegal. Like, I'm not, and I could be wrong. I'm not sure that it's actually illegal somewhere. Could very well be, but it just, like, it doesn't strike me like I could name a Shenzhen Convention or something that, like a Geneva Convention or Treaty of Versailles or some other big international thing that makes it very clearly verboten.
Yep. Well, there you go. Now it's a legit thing, I guess, well, as far as Star Trek fans are concerned. So a safe galaxy is a human galaxy is the expression that, I'm going to say Dr. Adam Sung or some Sung says in the episode that's in the last week's preamble they showed Brent Spiner's voice saying that, right? I keep thinking, you know, only good human is a dead human. I can never get that one out of my head. And Fly Me to the Moon, the song which was the title of last week's episode and the song that was made famous by Frank Sinatra and also was played in last week's episode when they went into the big party. The gala, right? Was written by Bart Howard. And it was originally called In Other Words, the song, but I guess because Fly Me to the Moon made a better sounding title. That's why we went there. So let's move into the headlines. And we've got here Picard 3, Season 3, it will be TNG Reunion. Is this your article or Jonathan's article? My article.
Doesn't have a name on it.
Okay, I think I posted this one. Okay, yeah. So, because there's been a lot of speculation about Michael Dorn joining, and Jonathan Frakes, as we know, has already been on the show. LeVar Burton, Gates McFadden, Marina Sirtis, and Brent Spiner. Well, Brent Spiner's also already in the show. They've been used as voiceovers in some of the teasers for this season's episode, but apparently it's been sort of revealed that the third season will be the one where the rest of the crew will show up and help out Dr. Admiral, whatever his name is, Clone 27 Picard. So, yeah, Dr. X.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting that it's kind of weird to have a teaser that's essentially spoilers. Nothing too terrible happens to the main guy, right? Unless he's going to get like another golem body. It just becomes like a recurring joke at the end of every season. It becomes like a...
Well, he's going to be like Doctor Who. He's going to morph into some actor from the Next Generation, right? And then he'll carry on the show. It'll season 12. It'll be like, you know, Will Wheaton as, you know, Wesley Crusher, Picard slash whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So here's an important question. Have you seen the Batman yet?
I've not seen the Batman, no.
All right. So should I talk about this next thing? Because it's kind of spoiler-ish.
I mean, I've already looked at the... I guess we should give a spoiler warning for folks who are listening. But I've already seen the link.
Okay. Yeah. So in the movie, near the end, there's I don't know if we talked about this. No, we didn't talk about this on the show, but at the end of the film, the protagonist or antagonist ends up in jail, and there's a voice that starts talking to him from another cell and giggling away, and clearly it's meant to be the Joker, and we don't really see who it is, and a lot of makeup on, like, to obscure the face, but apparently it's Barry Keoghan, who plays the Joker in the film. So I assume if they're going to come back and have another Robert Pattinson movie, then we will see this man as the Joker some point in the future. That's kind of cool. I don't remember what else he was in. Doesn't really say.
Is he not from... I'm just looking at his face.
Yeah, he's Drew in Eternals. Oh, he's the guy from Eternals. Yeah. The grumpy dude, right?
yeah, that was his power, being grumpy.
Yeah, he was the one that was sort of on the outs with the rest of them, right?
Yeah.
He wanted to smash. He wanted to Hulk smash everybody, if I remember correctly. Yep. So that's that. This best Batman thing, I'm going to save that for future. I mean, we're still collecting votes from people. I put a poll up about that. So yeah. So I'll talk about that. So I was listening to an interview on Q Radio here in CBC Radio in mm-hmm. Toronto, and they were interviewing a comic book writer about the Batman, and they had asked him who he thought was the best Batman and who he thought was the best Bruce Wayne. And so without revealing his answers, I thought, because his answers were actually pretty interesting, I thought. But I want to, so I'm going to, I've created a poll and put it up on for listeners to the show, and I'll have a link in the show notes here, asking which portrayal of Batman do you think is the best Batman, and which portrayal do you think is the best Bruce Wayne? So in other words, it doesn't need to be the same actor, right, per se, right? And then I also, for fun, I thought, well, why don't we just do who did the best Alfred as well? So, you know, we've got, so I'll give you an example of who the candidates are, and in no particular order, just the order that I remembered them. Okay. Mm-hmm. And Robert Pattinson, Christian Bale, Michael Keaton, Val Kilmer, George Clooney, Kevin Conroy, Adam West, Ben Affleck, or Will Arnett. Because I assume Kevin Conroy is the only animated Batman that we know of, right? I'm sure Jonathan can correct me. I'm sure.
I mean, they're
throwing things.
There might be different folks, and it gets real sort of interesting if you start thinking about like video games and stuff. Because this did go into 2D animation and 3D animation with Lego Batman.
Let's not be that deep. Yeah. I think.
Yeah, it becomes one of those weird collections that you see on YouTube of like, here's every Joker. I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe there's so many people that have done that.
Yeah, there's only one Joker. It's Mark Hamill. And then, who played the Batman, who plays the best Batman again? Robert Pattinson, the same crew, basically. I thought putting Will Arnett was in there was interesting too, because then we get the Lego Batman gets a vote. Right. And then for the Alfreds, we have Andy Serkis, Michael Caine, Michael Goo played Alfred in, I think, three incarnations of the Batman. I think he was Keaton's Alfred, he was Kilmer, and Clooney's Alfred as well, right? Alan Narrier was the original Alfred on the 66 television adaptation. Sean Pertwee played Alfred in the Gotham series that was on a few years ago, where Bruce Wayne is a young boy. Mm-hmm. Or teenager. And by the way, this is Sean Pertwee. I don't know what you know about Doctor Who, but I think the second or third Doctor was John Pertwee, right? No, I think it's Tom Baker, then John Pertwee. I always get them mixed up. Don't yell at me, people on the phone. But that is his father. So he's a descendant from Doctor Who. And the other Alfred we had was Jeremy Irons. I think he was most recently, right? Before Douglas Hodd, who also played... Douglas Hodd, did he play Alfred? I can't remember. Ralph Fiennes, or Ray Fiennes. And Jack Bannon. I think Jack Bannon plays him in the animated series. But no, I think Ralph Fiennes... Refines plays him in the animated series. Anyway, Jonathan can fact check that for sure. So yeah, so far we don't have a lot of responses. We're just hoping to get some more, and then we'll have some fun checking that one out. Who the definitive Batman, you know, Bruce Wayne, et cetera, are.
Yeah, that sounds cool. Like a good one.
Yeah, and then we've also got, you had a chance to watch the new trailer from Strange New Worlds, is out?
I did, and... I didn't throw links in here, but they had been leading up to this for like a week with a whole bunch of little Twitter shorts introducing each individual cast member, which I thought was kind of interesting.
I was going to say, there's one character who's blind, but still is amazingly, you know, sentient or whatever. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of introducing who the new crew are, basically, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Getting everybody in line there. So it looks like a cool trailer. Seems like a good sort of episodic kind of show. Maybe there'll be a story arc for the season. Certainly seem to touch a little bit on Destiny stuff, and we kind of know that Pike has weird plot armor, where maybe he...
Yeah.
If you remember Deadpool 2 with Domino, and Deadpool saying, what are you talking about? Luck is not a power, and then Domino proceeds to just luck her way through all these crazy things happening in her favor.
Right, yeah. Oh, they even show, I was just watching it without the sound on, I didn't realize that they have the Vulcan Ponfar ceremony as well.
Tim, I know you're usually into the costume design, so they've modified the outfits, the uniforms, again, even from the revision that showed up in Discovery. What are your thoughts on the new one, sort of independently, and compared to the iteration we saw in Discovery?
Well, it seems fine. I hadn't really looked at it that closely, but I guess it's just going to make for the look. Seems to have shoulder pads, which is very sort of 90s, you know. But other than that, I mean, at least the lapels, you know, and the hems are normal. Mind you, I haven't seen a single shot yet of the lower part of the body. Let's see what we see. Nope, just not much. But essentially, yeah, that sort of fancy fabric kind of look to it. Yeah, looks pretty cool.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know if have you ever seen the original series costumes up close, or
yeah, they have
pretty rustic.
Is it like the Science Fiction Museum here? I forget, they've renamed the thing it's attached to multiple times here in the Seattle area. So I've seen them, and so I mean, you kind of look at the '60s TOS stuff, and they're like they're not pajamas, you know. It's not correct to call them pajamas, but they're sort of basic cloth material. And Discovery's, second season said, hey, what if we made it a much more of almost like a biker outfit with a little bit more kind of a leather rubber sort of feel to it. And then these ones that I see are an evolution of that is less rubber and more cloth-like. It's kind of in between. It's kind of hard for me to describe. It right, retains the shoulder pads a little bit more, like the season two of Discovery, yep. But I can see how it's like, oh, after this 5-year mission is done, they go into the regular cloth material uniform, right? It feels like, oh yeah, you know, my uniform wore out. I've got a new one. It's a new design. It kind of makes sense. Like I see what they're doing. Like it's very recognizable, especially with the colors and the piping on the wrists and stuff, the cuffs.
Yeah, what I was getting at was I'm okay with them updating them for like I like the new look of J.J. Abrams stuff as well, right? Like I don't have a problem with them updating the Enterprise per se to make it look more, you know, in keeping with what we have, because I mean in the '60s it was a very low budget, right? You know, and it was made for you know videotape television type stuff, right? It wasn't made like I think it was filmed on film, but I mean. It wasn't meant to be in 4K, right?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
They look like they're wearing you know dime store outfits if you saw them up close, right? Sort of thing.
You know, the outfits, or sorry, the uniforms that sort of hold up quite well in retrospect are the Enterprise ones.
Yeah,
you know,
true.
It was sort of like, you know, NASA plus plus sort of design, kind of intentionally more jumpsuitish, and it kind of fit in with the whole idea and sort of design scheme that the NX-01 Enterprise is not, you know, the flying hotel in space of the Enterprise D, and it's not even the big battle cruiser of Kirk's Enterprise or Pike's Enterprise. It is like a tiny little submarine, and you're very uncomfortable and cramped. And it looks like even the stuff they wear is almost like a mechanics kind of outfit. And at the time, it was so different from seeing like Voyager or Deep Space Nine's uniform that I didn't really glom onto it. But with the hindsight of, you know, 2 decades almost, it really seems to fit. I'm like, oh yeah, that totally holds up.
Yeah, except for T'Pol's cat suit sort of outfit that she wore, which was clearly just for ratings, right? And that yeah. funny hat hair that she wore.
The decontamination scenes of like, let's get all the hot young bods yeah. in there rubbing each other down with goo. Yeah.
Tripping T'Pol for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it must have been tough work.
A little bit of beefcake to go with that cheesecake, you know?
Yeah, exactly. All right, you got the next story here. I'll let you rip into it.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw Saturday Night Live the most recent past weekend, but you usually have Pete Davidson doing some sort of pre-canned short, like little music video type ones. And that one that came out on Saturday was Netflix needs a short-ass movie category, right?
Right.
It's like, I can't be here. It's like, oh man, like, this Spider-Man movie is like 2.5 hours. Oh, this other movie, like 3 hours. Like, that's too much, man. Like, what happened to a movie that was under 2 hours? And so now the people at Netflix were clearly tickled by this idea. And there is literally a short ass movies category on Netflix. It doesn't have really? That many, wow. doesn't have that many in it. Surprisingly, doesn't scroll for very long, but you can find things that are legitimately under the, I thought it was 2 hours. It says 1 hour 30 here, says, but
it says a 90-minute movie category. They're calling it, right? So
yeah,
that's pretty funny. Yeah, no, it's funny. I think I got to Saturday Night Live late, and I ended up I always watch the news, the Weekend Update.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think they started talking about American politics, and no offense, but I just kind of zoomed past that and. I don't think I knew who the host was. I stopped to listen to who the musician was, but yeah, and I did see the Pete Davidson thing, and I probably should have gone back and watched it, but yeah, because he's usually got some pretty good stuff in there, but yeah, so I missed this whole story, but that's cool.
Yeah, Tim, if you're like me and my significant other, and you've realized that you're getting out of touch with modern music, you watch SNL's musical guest pretty diligently so that when the Grammys come, you can understand who's winning the award.
You know who it is.
Instead of being like, who the heck is this? Dang kids.
Well, it's funny, you know, like you say that, because I was when the spatial audio stuff came out, I started checking that stuff out on the Apple Music app, which I don't use all that often, to be honest with you, even though I have a mm-hmm. subscription. But, you know, I use it because, I mean, I probably had like, you know, 300, 400 CDs worth of stuff in my iTunes collection. That's all disappeared now that, you know, Apple's taken it over. But I wouldn't have known who Olivia Rodrigo was if I hadn't seen her album cover and thought, what the heck is this album? Because the album cover's got a really weird sort of, you know, I think she's got some grumpy look on her face and you know, weird ass stuff. And so I kind of looked at her and I kind of went, I wonder who that is. And I'll have to go back and check that out, right? So, yeah. So it was funny when I did actually watch the Grammys to see what was going on with that. So it's interesting. Did you watch the Grammys this year?
I dipped in and out. I saw, I think it was at the Grammys, was it LeVar Burton doing a little dig on the comedy bit that referencing Will Smith striking comedians?
Oh, really?
Like, no, without saying the name, oh. But it was like, you know, keeping our hands and feet to ourselves when the comedian award come up.
Yeah, well, and then Questlove got up there and said, I want everybody to stay 500 feet away from me when I announce this name. And then, but at the beginning, what's his name? Trevor Noah, the host, right? You said LeVar Burton. Did you mean Trevor Noah?
Trevor Noah was the host. But yeah. I thought LeVar Burton, I don't know, I might be confusing with another. There's like a whole bunch of award show season. So maybe I was catching something else, but it was like when they have a presenter, not the host, but the presenter talking.
Yeah. No, it could have been him. Because in the beginning, when Trevor Noah was doing his sort of preamble of introducing the show, he sort of said he was talking about all the people in the audience and stuff, or the, you know, famous people in the audience. And he said, we're going to do this, and we're going to do that, and we're going to do something else, and we're going to keep people's names out of our mouths. And and he moved on from there, right? So
Yeah. That was definitely Trevor Noah's bit, yeah.
Yeah, the shot. The shot. All right, so what's your next story?
This is one of those weird crossovers in the MTJC verse where the story itself is that Paramount is going to be making more Star Trek NFTs, non-fungible tokens. So the NFT part sort of crosses over into MTJC territory as being a very technical kind of thing, but it is here in Spotcast because it is Star Trek related NFTs, the idea that you will be able to vaguely own some machine-generated starship. And I think as we talked about, not on this show, but on MTJC, in my personal opinion, it's kind of weird to have scarcity for something like a digital item that's infinitely reproducible. Instead, I like to think of the NFT as being like a key, like your car to your house to, you know, the locker in your locker room kind of thing. And instead, the media it's attached to being kind of like the cool keychain or the cool fuzzy dice that go along with it. So on the surface here, they're selling these packs, and they're pricey. What was it, like $250? $250
yeah, 250,
to
yeah.
get some random yep. thing. But it's not so much about owning that particular starship as it is being able to gain access to other things. Like, yeah, they say some sort of experiential hub that will house this first and all future seasons of the NFTs, while you'll be able to involve collecting crewmates and doing vague, unspecified missions. So there's some sort of game thing going on here, right? Like, if you've ever seen Axie on the interwebs, particularly because the Axie game, one of the blockchains that it's attached to got hacked into, or at least some crossover chain sort of thing. Like, it very quickly becomes a mess to talk about, but there are things that you can do to earn cryptocurrency while playing the game. And I think that's what's kind of going on here. So if you've got the money, I mean, $250 is pretty pricey, but you know, maybe you can do something with it.
Yeah, it is a weird concept, the whole NFT thing. Like, you know, like, I mean, you know, getting like a, like, you know, a die cast model of an Enterprise, you know, you could collect one, and then, you know, if you hang on to yours and everybody else gets rid of theirs or lets their dog chew it or whatever, you know, mm-hmm. in 10 mm-hmm. years, it could be worth more than the other guys, right? But the whole concept of buying something like this, like, what can you do with it after you're done with it? Like, you've got it, you know, it's digital. So, you know, you have to hope that the computers can read the file in the next, you know, 20 years, right? If you're going to keep it that long. So it's a strange concept.
I think it's harder for me to imagine what to do here with, you know, what is a Paramount property. But if I turn my attention to what if we just rebrand this with Star Wars and make it Disney, then I'm like, oh, I know exactly what they can do. Disney's got that whole Galaxy's Edge world in Disney World. And if they haven't already, they're coming out with that hotel cruise ship kind of experience that's really supposed to be immersive. So I could 100% see this part of the experience is limited to, in this case, pass holders, right? You know, who has the pass? Well, it's this NFT. Cool. Then you're part of the resistance.
I see,
you know,
right?
You're not just regular resistance grunt. You are part of resistance leadership, right? So you get to go through this cool thing. So I'm like, okay, I could see that. It's less clear with Star Trek, given that Paramount doesn't have the huge multimedia and real world empire that Disney has, where there's, like, you know, physical merchandise and theme parks and other stuff that are all tied together. But maybe this will go there at some point. And maybe you mentioned a diecast. Maybe you will eventually be able to get a diecast model of your particular pass, even with like a little QR code or something, so that people can scan, like, oh, that's totally this one. Right, you get a physical paperweight that you can carry around with you, and yet it ties into, you know, other things beyond just having a JPEG.
Yeah, I mean, it's when you say it as a key, I think I did hear did watch an interesting video explaining NFTs the other day, and I probably have to scare it up and watch it again. But yeah, I think I got the impression that it is kind of like you said, it could be like an access key. It's I guess it's the equivalent of you and I can both have a California driver's license, but your driver's license and my driver's license are distinct in terms of the number and the identity, right, that they represent.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they look the same, you know, they're actually not the same thing, right?
Yeah, they're not fungible. If I show up, you know, at the American border with a Tim Mitra license, they're gonna have some interesting questions for me in the little room that they're gonna put me in, right?
True. Well, we can talk about that a little bit later in the show too, because we have an example of that coming up very shortly. Right?
Yeah, yeah. It gets real in the vague spoilers for the episode of Picard we're talking about today.
Sure. Okay. Cool. Oh, and look, you've got a spoiler for everybody's favorite Orphan Black show.
Yeah, so Orphan Black has been gone for a little bit. It's been a couple of years, right? I forget exactly.
Oh, many years, like 4 years or so.
Yeah. Okay, it's approaching many, I suppose. It feels like it wasn't that long ago, but I guess it has. But the Orphan Black show is going to get a new series slated to premiere in 2023, put together by AMC. So is it correct here? The Orphan Black Echoes, a new series set in the near future of the original that follows the lives of a new group of women, which is going to be interesting to see what they end up doing with this. Because sounds like it will not include Tatiana Maslany, but she's still around, so maybe she could make a couple of cameos, so to speak, depending where they take things. I'd be really shocked if they didn't have cameos.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, have you seen the new Matrix movie yet?
Yes.
Yeah. So you know how they basically worked in Agent Smith and Morbius with new actors, right?
Mm-hmm.
They kind of looked like the same person, and they kind of acted the same way. But you know, the only consistent thing in it was Trinity and Neo, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Same sort of idea. I mean, like, you know, does Tatiana Maslany come back as the older aunt now or something? You know,
I mean,
maybe bring her in as a spoiler, right? Or as a sort of surprise, you know, character, right?
I mean, it could even be a cute thing where they didn't, you know, want to tie it too closely to the story, but just give you a wink, wink, nudge, nudge that they're like, you know, whoever the main characters are, go to a coffee shop and there's this group of, you know, twin sisters in the background sort of thing, right? And they pass by them sort of thing. You could do a whole bunch of stuff beyond having to make them a major part of the show. You could just sort of wink, wink, nudge, nudge, like, yep, they exist. It kind of gives you an idea of where they're at sort of thing.
Well, you know, the Dyad Institute is portrayed by the Bridgepoint Health Hospital here in Toronto, and it's just down the street from my house, like a 5-minute walk. You know, I used to pass by it every day on my way to work on the streetcar. Very close to Dyad. I know where that guy was shot in the Orphan Black show. All right. Cool. All right. Well, we're at the main part of our show here today where, see how fast that went? It's amazing. We're at the main part of our show where we talk about something Star Trek shaped. And this time we're going to talk about Star Trek Picard season 2, episode 6, 2 of 1. And yeah, and then we'll talk about a little bit about the Moon Knight afterwards. So, but over to Jaime for the recap. Oh, look how short your recap is. Holy cow.
It's not that complicated of an episode when you sort of unwind it. It's told in almost like a memento sort of storyline of like, here we are.
Yeah, flashes back, yeah.
And meteor res, and then we go 30 minutes back, 24 minutes, 21, 18, 15. Like, you start approaching real time, right? So it is it feels more complicated than it sort of really is. But you start out with the La Sirena crew in meteor res huddled over a wounded Picard. Like, what the heck happened? Well, it turns out 34 minutes earlier, he was, you know, accidentally using his crush's name with someone else, which is just as good because I keep thinking of this character as Laris, because it's the same actress, but no, this is Talon, right?
Right, yeah.
And there's definitely some eyes there, kind of seemingly both ways, which is kind of interesting. Let me take a little short segue here. Given what we know with season 3, with Gate McFadden coming back as Dr. Crusher, I am kind of curious if, you know, assuming Laris makes it through the end of this season, I kind of want to see her and Crusher sort of stare each other down a little bit, right? You got to figure there must be some history with Beverly Crusher not being in Picard's life at the Chateau.
Well, she was married to him in the All Things Come to an End, whatever it's called, the All Things Must Pass, or whatever.
All Good Things. She was married and divorced. And he says, like, oh, you kept the name, right? Because she's Beverly Picard. She kept the name even after the divorce.
Oh, is she? Yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's got to be, you know, there's got to be some drama there, is what I'm thinking.
Yeah, for sure.
And you've got...
Yeah, so is she going to come back as the older woman, I wonder?
I do kind of want to see Gates McFadden sort of, you know, look Laris up and down and be like, yeah, you would be his type. Make some snide comment.
Yeah, for sure. Scottish to Irish, there you go, right?
Mm-hmm. There's a region of the world that he tends to like. Yep. We learn that Jurati was captured on purpose. It was kind of the whole idea was to get her into the nerve center, the control center, where all these wonderful computers are, so she could hack into it and change the IDs and stuff to match the database, including the face recognition.
Didn't the Queen say that to her? Didn't the Queen say that to her at the end of last week's episode too? Though,
you know,
about the fact she got.
These blur together to me because usually I end up watching the Ready Room, which gives you you know, some random scene from the next episode. So I never really know, did this occur in the previous episode or did I see this part of the scene from the Ready Room preview?
Yeah.
But you think it actually was in the previous episode that we knew she was intentionally captured?
Yeah, I think right at the very end when she puts her arm around her, she says, you know, getting captured on purpose, what a good idea, you know?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I do remember seeing the Queen pop up there. Okay, yeah, sure. So it's a reminder that she was captured on purpose, but oh no, the Queen, the Borg Queen, is causing some issues here for this plan. But does sort of point out, like, you probably should have used the little knockout gas when the guy was a little closer to you, not like halfway across the room. How are you going to get the keys now? But you know, she does help her. She's like, look, use this technique, you'll be able to bust through these shackles. So hacks occur just in time because Rios had already been scanned. They're like, you're not this old doctor dude from the South. And he's like, no, just scan it again. And in the intervening time, the security guards are apparently like totally okay with the idea of like, yeah, I guess it was just a glitch, man. Bad scan. And, you know, basically this episode is structured as current time struggle to help an injured Picard. And we get flashbacks to, you know, several minutes ago, like I mentioned, the sort of memento style thing, but also flashbacks or visions within those from young Picard's perspective. So continuing to get the weird, what the heck is going on in his brain sort of thing. So, again, more sort of, you know, eyes romance between sort of Laris, which is actually Talon, and Picard. You've got sort of the chaos of Jurati dealing with the inner voice because the Queen is continuing to like cause a ruckus here in this party and really making Jurati look like a psychopath if you can't hear her voice, right? The inner voice in her head, just at this party talking to herself. Rios is like totally down with being in the past. Like, apparently whatever cigar thing he's using in the future is not a legit thing. He's like, oh man, this is like a real cigar. And he's really jazzed about real food that isn't replicated. And
real mashes,
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's dirtier, grittier sort of thing. Seven's kind of doing all right. I wrote a note here. I actually don't remember if Seven actually said a word this episode. She was in scenes.
I don't think she did. Oh, she might have, in the voiceover panics when they're trying to get him into... You're right, you know, actually, even when Raffi's upset at the very end there, and she's, you know, they're trying to convince, what were they trying to convince Raffi of something? And she looks over at Rios, who's arguing with her, and then Seven just nods at her.
I think it was when they're going to go into Picard's brain sort of thing.
And she doesn't like, or Raffi doesn't like the idea, but she just look over at her. Yeah, she didn't say a word.
They didn't want to pay Seven for, you know, there are different pay scales for speaking roles versus non-speaking, and I don't know why that would apply here or for Jeri Ryan, but it was sort of notable to me that she shows up in a lot of scenes, but I don't actually remember hearing her voice. You know, but Seven's doing all right. She's kind of adjusting. Mm-hmm. Raffi, however, is seeing the ghost of Elnor in a bunch of people's faces. She's sort of not having it, right? You know, you got to let everything sort of go here, where there's, in this one scene, kind of a lot going on, right? There's Picard sort of not letting go of his feelings for Laris, and he's got a woman right in front of him who looks exactly like Laris. You got, you know, Raffi not letting go to Elnor. I don't know what Rios's particular problem is, but it's a little weird that he's so jazzed up about, you know, this stuff being real. It feels like they were going to lead somewhere with that.
True.
Right? Because he's like legit happy in a weird way to be there, which is, you know, kind of a weird thing. Wow, I wrote these notes so light, I'm starting to forget what the let it go part was.
Yeah.
It might.
Is that Frozen singing?
Was he already? Oh, no, he's not, because I'm looking at my notes. The singing doesn't happen yet, because you actually do end up having the face-off between Dr. Soong and Picard.
Yeah, you hear Brent Spiner's voice saying, "Picard!" And then, like, which catches everybody by surprise, right?
Yeah, and he comes in, he's like, "Hey, I know your buddy Q, and I need you to stop this path, right? You need to stop what you're doing, because that's what he told me that he wanted you to do." I remember what the let it go thing was. That was Picard and Talon talking about the fact that Rene Picard, the astronaut, is having trouble with what's going on, right? She's not letting go of the stress, and she really needs like a therapist sort of thing. She's really right on the cusp of leaving the mission.
Well, she's texting him, and she's like, Laris is, you know, pwned her phone so she can actually see what she's writing, right?
Yeah. You know, she's there getting ordered by her commander, you know, in a nice way, you know, like, I ordered you, come here, let's take this group photo, let's celebrate. But it's an awkward thing for her, because she is having serious doubts about going through with the mission. Coming back to Soong, apparently he has been added to the board of the Europa mission, and this immediately gets Picard in trouble, because, man, the security perks are super good. Like, this dude just walks over to this lady. She's like, "Hey, I'm glad you're on the board." He's like, "Yeah, actually, so this guy over here is dangerous." And they must have like a hand signal or something, because the guards are super fast and like, "We got to get Picard."
Well, we've got earpieces, right? We've got earpieces.
Did the lady have her own earpiece and be like, "You know, we got a code 7. You all need to beat up this old man over here"? Like,
yeah, I don't know.
She didn't go grab guard. Right, it was like very true, quick. True. So, you know, there's some drama there around, like, how is he going to get out of this one? Autocorrect caused something weird here. They turn out the lights to cause a distraction. So the Borg Queen does some sort of electronic pulse, right, to cause the lights to go.
Shortwave, EMP.
Yeah, which leads us into that weird time-honored Trek trope of cast members singing. So Jurati goes into a singing sort of thing to cause a distraction. So this gives Picard enough of an out to sneak his way around, you know, James Bond style, sneak away from security. They're a little lost there. Mm-hmm. So beyond the showing off the singing chop sort of thing and the distraction, this apparently was part of the Queen's whole agenda. She's like, "Oh, good. So I forget what she says, but it was effectively like, your anxiety was holding me back from fully taking over. But now that you've got all this endorphins or adrenaline or something, you know, some body chemistry thing going on." She's like,
"As endorphins, yeah."
Yeah, she's like, "Now I can take over. Thanks." And she does. Right? And you see the weird eyes black out, like a shark kind of thing. So that's not good. Picard does make his way over to have a nice talk-to-talk with his ancestor, right? With Rene Picard. Sort of pretends to be a guard, and she even kind of points out, like, "Look, I feel so bad saying this. Aren't you like a little old to be a security guard?" He's like, "Oh, but I'm like the wisest one amongst them all." You know, he plays into it and gives her what feels like predestiny kind of words of like, "Look to the stars, you know, consider these sorts of things," and it feels like stuff that will stick through his family that ultimately his mother will tell him, right? "Look to the stars." It's almost like a family motto.
Yeah.
And
yeah, good point. Yeah.
Yeah. And seemingly, you know, he's convinced her to go on with the mission, but Soong he's like committed here. He comes in his like hot sports car and tries to run them over. Picard pushes Rene out of the way, but he does get hit. So now we know, you know, how he ended up getting injured. We've caught up to real time. You know, the crew doesn't really have, you know, the fancy pants medical bay to deal with him. So they're like, what are we going to do? And Rios is like, oh, well, I know a doctor here, which I wrote in my notes as Dr. Nasty of the Pasty. I'm still convinced that Rios,
right, yeah, yeah,
I'm still convinced that Rios is going to pull like a Futurama here. So they call up Teresa, I forget what the doctor's last name is, like, go back to the clinic that was, you know, from the ice raid and try to help them out. We switch a bit over to see Sung having, you know, this conversation with his daughter, essentially kind of confessing, like, what have I become, right? Like, what have I done here in my attempts to try to achieve my sort of life's goal of, from what Corey thinks, she thinks, oh, to keep me alive. And she ends up discovering on his computer all of these video files and pictures of, like, what could be a young Herb. She's like, I don't remember any of this stuff. What the hell is this? And eventually she makes it through, like, the diary stuff from Dr. Sung, with, like, oh man, it is really clear he has been cloning and watching a whole bunch of these kids die as he's been trying to save them from whatever weird, like, genetic disease they're getting from the genetic modification.
And for some reason, she's the last one.
Yeah, I don't know.
He doesn't say why.
I don't know if it's because he was, like, feeling bad about it, giving up of, like, this is beyond my abilities. It's a little unclear from his statements as to why he thinks this is the last, right? So she's totally freaked out. We go back over to Picard and the clinic, and he's sort of physically okay, but he's in a coma, but with weirdly a whole bunch of high brain activity, like he's just, you know, mentally trapped in there. And that's where you get Talon saying, like, oh, I can do like a Vulcan mind meld kind of thing, just kind of, you know, MacGyver cobble this together. This is where you had said that Rafi was like, yo, we can't be doing this. And Rios is like, bro, this is all we got. If we don't get this dude taken care of, we can't save the future, right? We gotta take the risk. And you do end up with a nice, interesting Red Queen sort of look to Jurati, Borg Queen Jurati, in the beautiful red dress, walking down the street, totally free, totally in control.
Yeah, this episode did remind me of something else. I was trying to remember what it was, but the whole sort of, it's very similar to the episode I'm going to talk about in a minute, the Moon Knight, because, you know, it's the one, in both episodes, you know, you have one character who has to surrender control of the body to the other character, because that's what the Queen's been asking all through the show, is let me take over. You know, like, even getting her out of the handcuffs in the very beginning. And then, you know, eventually she does manage to get Jurati to the point where Jurati, you know, creates so many endorphins that the Queen's able to take over the body, right? And that's sort of once again, Allison Pill's character has lost complete control over herself. Because, I mean, that's what happened in the first season. Like, you would think Picard would distance himself from her after this, right? Because she seems to be susceptible to being, you know, taken over by other people and become a puppet for them, right?
Like, yeah, under alien mind control is maybe that's her trope. So it's a Picard, you know, keeps getting new sleeves, altered carbon style, and she just keeps getting, you know, zoinked in her brain, controlled every season.
Yep. Raffi's always, it's funny, she's always trying to do the most advanced thing, and then when, you know, this time around they want to do something advanced, and she's totally against it, you know, which is, she was using technology in the last couple of episodes constantly to try and solve her problems, and then when they offer her technology, she's like, no, let's not do that.
Yeah.
But I guess somebody has to object, right?
Raffi is like the worst example of the kind of person who everything is a bad idea except their idea, right? I definitely know people like that. I was like, literally the only reason you're going along with this is because it was your idea. Because in this same exact situation that it wasn't your idea, you were 100% against this.
Yeah, totally, for sure. Well, let's switch over to Moon Knight. Let me just open my notes here. Almost the same show. No, not quite. So Moon Knight's episode 2 is called Summon the Suit, and we'll find out why in a minute. Basically, you know, we find our hero wakes up in his bed, and he's chained to the bed, and he ends up, you know, flailing himself off the bed, and, you know, because he's tethered with the leg constraint. The leg constraint gets mentioned a few times in the show, and I'm not going to mention it again, but, you know, they keep, every time somebody sees it, they're like, are you living here with somebody, or are you, like, into some weird stuff? And he's like, no, I just have trouble sleeping. But he goes to the mirror in the bathroom, and he looks at the mirror, and he, because last week's episode, he was talking to the Mark character in the mirror, the reflection, just knows him as Mark. So anyway, we see him going to work, and when he gets to work, the place is all, you know, police taped off, and there's been some ruckus, and the museum's closed, and so he says, you know, says to the security guard, have you looked at the footage yet? You know, I'm the security footage, you know, I may have some information about that. And he says, this is going to just melt your brain. And so they sit down, and he goes, okay, Scotty, let's see what's on the tape. And because he goes, no, it's not Scotty, my name is Steven, but anyway, so... They started watching Scotty on the the tape, and he's hiding behind something and crying, and you see him running through the museum and all that kind of stuff, but you don't see the jackal chasing him, right? So it really looks kind of messed up from the point of view of the security guard, and it just, you know, so all the way through, you know, he's running around, he's knocking over vases and stuff like that. He eventually goes into the bathroom, which is where he, you know, Moon Knight takes over and trashes the place. And then as he's walking out, you see him, glaring at the camera, and clearly it's at the security camera, and clearly it's the Mark character who's taken over Steven's body. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's sitting, you know, next scene, you see him sitting in HR, and the guy's being very supportive and very HR like, and basically firing him base. And so now he's been fired from the museum. And he has this golden man that he talks to in the nearby park, you know, one of those frozen statue kind of guys. And he's telling him all his troubles, and finally he, you know, realizes, well, maybe I should go check out this some of the things he's been left with. Is one is a storage unit key. So he decides to, you know, thanks for helping me out with this idea, and runs off to find it. And he goes to five different places that have under this particular brand, and eventually he goes to the fifth one, and he says, you know, I don't know if you recognize me, or you know if there's a storage locker under the name of, you know, Steven, what's his last name? Steven Clark? Is Steven Clark is the name? I forget.
Ooh, that's a good...
Maybe under Steven, or maybe it's under Mark and whatever, and the guy looks at him and says, yeah, I recognize you. You're number 43. I never forget a face. And takes him over to the storage unit and opens it up, and inside Steven finds a cot with a pillow and a bunch of clothing and some other things, some other stuff on shelves, and he finds a go bag sitting there, and he goes through the bag, and of course there's stacks of euros and there's stacks of US dollars and a US passport with the name Mark Spector. So now he knows the last name of the person. And and he also finds a scarab, the one that he had in his dream. And he's like, oh my God, this is real. And as he picks it up, he takes it apart. It sort of sprouts wings and starts to hover and point in a certain direction, but not north, right? And in the reflection, there's a mirror there. And the Mark character is talking to him. He's like, Steven, listen to me carefully. You know, you weren't supposed to see any of this stuff. And so he starts to explain who he is. He's basically Khonshu's avatar, and he's representing this Egyptian god of the moon, which is where the Moon Knight comes from. And, you know, we deliver justice to those who harm the vulnerable, kind of thing. And Mark or Steven says, this is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. And he's like, I eat a steak and I start going bonkers. And so now here we are again. The reflection dude is saying, give me the body, or let me finish this. And Mark finally just sort of says, no, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to grab all this stuff, this money and this passport and this gun. I'm going to take it. I'm going to run over to the authorities and have them arrest me and put me on pills, and you'll never be able to take me over again, kind of thing. Because you ruined my life already by, you know, making me lose my job and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, so he gets out into the hallway, and Khonshu shows up and starts chasing him around. And give it back, you fool, Khonshu says. And that's F. Abrams' voice.
F. Murray Abraham?
Yeah, he's the voice of Khonshu, apparently. So eventually, as he's running through the storage unit, it crashes through a door and ends up, you know, falling down on the street. And just as a scooter arrives and almost runs him over, and she looks down at him and says, Mark, you know, and then, you know, jump on my bike, I'll get you out of here. And as she's driving along, she's telling him, this is the Layla character who he'd spoke to on the phone last week. And, you know, you've got the suit, and, you know, stop with the accent, you're freaking me out. And he finds out that she's his wife, and she's not buying the whole, you know, Cockney accent. She says, like, drop the act, you know, I'm not buying this. And so finally they go to his flat and to see what's going on. And you know, as he enters the flat, the Mark in the reflection says, get her out of here. You know, she's in danger if you show her any of this stuff. And So she's wandering around. She looks at the shackle on the bed. She says, "Are you living here with somebody?" And he's like, "No, I live here by myself." And she sees that he's got some French poetry, and she starts reading it, and he starts reciting it back to her in French. And he tells her that this is his favorite poet. And she says, "No, no, you're wrong. It's my favorite poet. And then she sees some Egyptian hieroglyphs as well, and she can read them. And you know, he's surprised that she can read the hieroglyphics as well. She's looking, and she looks at him. She says, "I'm not buying this, Mark. You know, you wanted the divorce. Here's the divorce papers. Sign the papers. Let's get this over with." And of course, Stephen says, "I'm not going to divorce you. I think this Mark guy that you married is a twit. I think you like this anyway." So as he starts going over to the go bag to show her the evidence of what he's found in the locker, and the reflection version of Mark says to him, "You know, you're making a mistake. Don't show her what's in the bag." And you know, as he's rumbling through the bag, and Stephen is explaining to her what he's found, and finally the reflection says to him, "They will kill her if you show her what's in that bag." And so he stops talking and just sort of says, "Oh, there's nothing in the bag. Nothing I wanted to show you." And finally she says, "What's in the bag?" And she pushes him aside, and she actually throws him aside, and then she looks inside the bag and she finds the scarab, and she's like, "Oh, sure, this is the scarab that takes us to Ahmet's tomb. And you know, we've both spent our lives looking for this, and you're going to, you know, just take it off and run with it by yourself," sort of thing, right? And he keeps trying to explain to her, "I'm not Mark Spector, you know." And he says, "You're the only person I know that can possibly help me with this. I don't remember." And she's like, "You don't really remember any of our adventures." And then knock, knock, there's a knock on the door. And of course, you know, it's the police, and D.C. Fitzgerald and D.C. Kennedy are at the door, and they want to come in and look around the apartment. And so he lets them in, and she hides, and they end up, you know, looking at the bed, and they're like, you know, they think he's being kinky, and he's like, "No, no, it's just because I have trouble sleeping or sleepwalking." And they eventually find the bag, and they find the money and stuff, and so they decide to arrest Stephen and take him down to the station. And they're actually taking him not to the station, but they're taking him over to see Arthur Harrow, which is played by Ethan Hawke, we saw last week. And so they're searching the police records before we find out where they're going. They talk about these archaeologists that have been found, you know, executed, you know, execution style kind of thing. But as he's watching them in the car, he notices that when he looks at their forearms, they all have those scales that the Harrow character had on his arm last week. He's like, "I'm in trouble," and they leave him in the car, and he starts talking to the reflection, and the reflection's like, "Let me take over your body. Let me take over your body. I'm the Borg queen. Let me take over your body."
Yeah, what a week to have these conversations. They're back to back.
Yeah, exactly. So, and he's like, "I'm not giving you control ever," kind of thing. And then you know, Ethan Hawke's character Harrow shows up and pulls him out of the car and has the handcuffs taken off of him. He's being very, you know, nice to him, and he's like, "You know, no wonder your scales don't have balance. You got these crazy people in your head, and you know, and of course, you know, maybe they chose you to be the avatar because your mind was already broken, and possibly, and of course, you know, then Khonshu shows up and starts telling Mark to kill him and break his windpipe. And Ethan Hawke's like, "Is he saying to kill me, you know?" And anyway, so he takes him around the neighborhood, and it turns out it was a high crime neighborhood. And now that Ethan Hawke and Harrow and his characters are around, people feel safe. And he's like, "Here, try the lentil soup. It's great." And, you know, Khonshu's always throwing tantrums. That's all he can do. And, you know, he says, "I am the real justice, right?" And, you know, he says, Stephen says, "Can you hear him?" And he says, "Well, I can't hear him anymore. I was the vengeance before, the fist of vengeance before you, but I can't hear him anymore." Mm-hmm. And he says, "The problem with Khonshu's sort of justice is it comes too late. It's after the fact, after the harm has been done, you know, so, and that's not good." And Ahmet, who he wants to free, judges people, like Minority Report judges them before the bad stuff is done. So, and the scarab, which he's looking for, will lead us to her tomb, and that's what we want to. We want to resurrect her and, you know, have her take over. And he's like, I don't have the scarab." And he hears the soup bowl or whatever, the reflection saying to him, "Don't say her name. Don't say her name." Ethan Harrell's character says, let me talk to him and tell him." And he says, "You know, this won't be your last mission. Khonshu tells you that every time, and it always seems to be this one more thing." Which is another trope of all these things. You know, what people always want to get out. Always one more thing they have to do before they get out, right?
Deal with the devil kind of trope that you can never fulfill the contract, never repay the debt.
The bargain, yeah. Exactly. And he's like, well, isn't she like punishing an innocent person by prejudging the crime sort of thing? And he says, what if it's like, you know, and he said, well, if it's you have a diseased arm, you cut the arm off to save the rest of the body. He goes, well, a child is not a diseased arm.
Mm.
You guys are, he says, are you guys all into this? You're all killing innocent people. You're killing a baby before years before it produces a crime. Like that's crazy. Like, you know, you're all baby killers kind of thing. Right. Anyway, so the Harrow says to him, you know, you know what this cane is. It basically contains a sliver of her power. And like, where's the scarab? Where's the scarab? And he's like demanding that he gives him the scarab. And finally, Leia shows up and says, I have it, you know. And then, you know, Ethan Hawke starts pounding on the ground with his big stick and with his cane. And the bricks all start turning pink and fiery red and whatever. And she's like, summon the suit. And he's like, what suit are you talking about? I have no idea what you're talking about. So finally, the two of them run off, and Layla and Steven start running away. And Harrow summons a demon jackal to chase them down and go get them and get the scarab from them. And finally, they run into a room, and it's like a mausoleum and sort of like look like magic stuff. And Steven says, oh, great, I'm going to die in a decrypted or magician's man cave kind of thing, right?
Yeah, with the weird artifacts.
And she's like, your name is Mark. And finally she calls him Steven, like, you know, to try and convince him that they need to work together. And he believes this. So the jackal shows up, and he ends up tussling around with the jackal. He ends up falling out of the window as he hears the voice of Khonshu saying, summon the suit. And as he about to hit the ground, all of a sudden he's covered in this white suit with a funny mask, and I'm sure Jonathan will know that there probably is a couple of iterations of this Moon Knight uniform sort of thing, and this is sort of an alternate uniform that he has. I've seen some animated drawings of him in this suit, and you know, he sees the reflection. The reflection says to him, like, what are we wearing? This is not the ceremonial armor of the Khonshu temple. It's like psycho Colonel Sanders sort of thing, right? And then he says, where's the scarab? And he goes, oh, I don't know. He reaches behind him and he pulls out these two poles. He goes, oh, these are cool. What are these poles for, right? They're like fighting sticks or something like that, right? Or what do you call it? It's nunchucks kind of thing, right? Again, who did we see that had those kind of sticks recently in some other Disney thing? I'm thinking Boba Fett or something like that, right? Anyway, so the jackal shows up and he's fighting with a jackal, and she climbs down from the building that they're up in, and she can see him fighting the jackal, but she can't see the jackal, right? And so she starts, you know, smashing bottles over, you know, the head of what she thinks is the jackal, and, you know, of course the jackal just tosses her aside kind of thing. And eventually, you know, in the ensuing battle, whatever, Mark finally reaches and punches the jackal and gets this real sort of power, because he's wearing the suit. He's got this real powerful punch, and he's like, aha, beat you, I knocked you down. And the jackal reattacks him, and they end up in the middle of the street, and both of them get hit by a car. Looks like the jackal takes the worst of it, but both of them get knocked out. And finally he gets up and he goes over and he stands next to a bus and he sees the reflection in the window again. And he says, you know, someone's going to get hurt. Look around. This is like not good. There's innocent people here. And, you know, if you keep doing this fighting with this jackal, we're going to have trouble. And he says, all right, fine. Take over my body and solve this, settle this. So Moon Knight appears, and he's got the Moon Knight, the ceremonial garb. And he starts climbing up the side of a building to draw the jackal away, and he runs across the top of the buildings, you know, and has the jackal sort of keep up with him, and finally gets to the point where he comes to the end of the rooftops, and just happens to be that there's a sculpture there with a pointy bit at the top, and so he grabs the jackal and impales the jackal and defeats him by stabbing him on this fancy piece of art, right? And then finally, you know, like he's now there by himself, but now he's Mark, right? And So now the reflection is Stephen. Stephen's like, is this what this is like? You know, and he sort of says, you ruin people's lives. You know, I don't believe any of you said. And then Khonshu appears and sort of chastises Mark and says, you swore he would not interfere. And you've altered the arrangement by having him, you know, part of the deal now. Right. And he's like, the body doesn't belong to you. The body belongs to me. This is Khonshu talking. Right. And he's like, it's too late for the scarab. You know, Haro has the scarab already and so on and so forth. And he goes, you're not going to like who my next candidate is, you know, someone who's near and dear to your heart. And, you know, Khonshu's got his eyes on Layla. He wants Layla to be the next avatar sort of thing. Right. And then he's like, you know, well, let's go. And he goes, well, where are we going? He goes, where do you think we're going? And so the next thing you see, Mark wakes up in Egypt, and he goes to the window and opens up the window, and you see the Great Pyramids there in the distance. So this is how the episode ends, and next week's episode is going to take place there in the land of the pharaohs. And that was the end of the show. So very, very similar episode in terms of, like, you know, one character wanting to take over the body of the other character kind of thing, right? So ironically, the same thing on both episodes, right?
Yeah, a couple things we sort of learned here, that Ethan Hawke's characters, I forget his name, the antagonist, had
Harrow,
thank you, had been
Harrow,
the Moon Knight, I guess, before, or at least he had Khonshu as
he was the Avatar before, yeah.
Yeah, so it does have a bit of, I'm trying to compare it to other things like
Green Lantern. Perhaps
Green Lantern doesn't have like a strict master thing. The thing that's coming to my mind in comics is Ghost Rider. And I know this has changed quite a bit, but there was a period of time where you had the original Ghost Rider from like the 70s or 80s, right? It was like a motorcycle demon on wheels kind of thing, right? Like a demon that takes over a guy and they, you know, they fight crime. They fight evil, but in kind of like a bad guy sort of way. And then there's a later Ghost Rider character that's a younger guy. Gets in trouble, and he becomes a ghost writer who punishes people, right, with his penance stare. Like, he makes you feel all the victims that you've ever had, sort of thing. And the original ghost writer guy, Johnny Blaze, I think his name was, is, you know, he comes back as sort of a, hey, I got rid of the ghost writer demon, I'm no longer possessed by it, and I see that you're possessed by it, I'm going to kill you and it to stop this thing, right? So it's kind of like a situation where they think at the time that this Ghost Rider demon passes from person to person at some point as like this weird avatar sort of thing. So that's kind of what came to my mind. I did a terrible job of describing what was a period of time in like the late 90s for Ghost Rider. I believe this has changed so that there are more details come out so that the two Ghost Rider demons are not the same demons. There are many spirits of vengeance. And I actually wonder if Khonshu is considered a spirit of vengeance along those same lines, you know, this thing that passes, that can pass from person to person. And it's actually almost like the Venom symbiote, right? That sort of goes from host to host.
Yeah.
The other thing we learned in this episode is that inside of every British man is a American hero waiting to get out.
Right. Or inside of every sexy Romulan is a English or American woman trying to get out, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, it was interesting. It was very much like an exposition episode, I think, too, from the point of view. There was a lot of explaining happening in this one, right? Because they stop and talk about Khonshu and I'm the Avatar and so on and so forth. Like what the role of Moon Knight is. I mean, they've only got six episodes to do all this exposition in, right? And what I like about this, I like the style where, you know, like the Layla character shows up and starts, even last week when she's on the phone with him, just rather than explaining, you know, what the relationship is, she just says things to him that we piece together what the relationship is, right? Like the authors or writers let us put together the backstory, right?
Mm-hmm.
'Cause she does sort of say, oh yeah, sure, the thing that we've been working on all these years to try and find, you want to keep it to yourself now kind of thing. And because obviously the Mark character is much more aggressive than the Stephen character, you know, in terms of like his agenda. And he's, you know, he's trying to tell her, I'm protecting you from this knowledge that you don't want to have. And that may be true, but But I like the way they sort of, like, you know, even with the cops showing up, you think they are legitimate cops for a while, and then it turns out that they're just, you know, agents of Harrow, right? But I like that. I like the style of storytelling where, rather than sit down and explain, well, you know, back in the day, you know, sort of thing, like they just sort of flash, you know, they let the audience put together the story. I'm sure there's probably a writing style that Jonathan can tell us about, but he's not here, so we have to deal with it. But yeah, I like the sort of fast moving, you know, Indiana Jones, Temple of Doom, or Indiana Jones kind of, you know, like they matter-of-factly say this stuff as if we all know, right, kind of thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. It is kind of like a Jason Bourne kind of thing, but with Indiana Jones on top of it, where a guy doesn't remember who he is or who he really is. But in this case, he's involved in some Indiana Jones. There's ancient cultures with spiritual magical artifacts involved that sort of make it nutty.
Yeah. Well, and also the whole idea of, like, I kept thinking to myself as I was watching the episode today, like, you know, because this Stephen character has gone through his entire life. I mean, he grew up with his mom, and he's got this house, and, you know, he's got this. He's not been able to keep a steady job because he's got these blackout periods that he doesn't know about, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the blackout periods are when Mark Spector takes over and becomes Moon Knight, right? So, and there was a discussion about the Khonshu character, which I didn't say here, but he mentioned that, you know, when I found you, you were a corpse. So in other words, he reincorporated the Mark Spector guy and then put him inside of Steven's body, right? To sort of let him run around and stuff like that, right? So, because that would have been weird as, you know, like as someone who just, you know, would black out for like a day. Well, we saw that happen too. Like when, you know, he has the date with a woman on Sunday and he goes to the restaurant to meet her and it turns out it's Tuesday and he's missed 3 days, right?
Yeah. And actually the thing you're mentioning there does make me, maybe that's why I think a lot about Ghost Rider, at least the 1990s, yeah. Dan Ketch or Dan Ketchum, like Ash Ketchum from Pikachu, character, where I'm pretty sure that kid comics, was dead or dying and, ends up encountering the Ghost Rider who sort of brings him back to life or restores him in exchange for service for justice. Where this is kind of the same thing ostensibly, right? Like you said, like you were dead, I brought you back to life, you owe me now, sort of thing.
Yeah. I gotta say though, I do get tired of this whole sort of trope of Egyptian gods coming back and being resurrected, and I know that's part of their lore, right? But or their mythos. But, you know, like the mummy, I like the adventure part of the mummy movie, but I didn't really like the part where the gods show up and start, you know, taking over the world and all that kind of stuff, right? And all four mummy movies, there was the one with The Rock and the two with, I think two or three with Brendan Fraser in it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I liked the sort of Indiana Jones kind of vibe that they had with Rachel Weisz and him, but yeah, just, I don't know, it's like mummy or the mummy and well, the mummy literally, but, you know, mummy movies or zombie movies, it's kind of, you have to suspend disbelief to believe it's true, you know, sort of thing.
Yeah. And I think you're right. There is the trope that the popularity of certain mythologies, like the Egyptian mythology, Greek Roman mythology gets a lot of play. Might be
Thor.
Yeah. Might be kind of interesting to see, you know, lesser known things like Incan or Olmec mythology, or I don't know what's going on in like Cambodia, Thailand, Vietnam. I bet you they got some interesting stuff too. It just doesn't get a lot of play. Yeah. Might give you a little bit of a different flavor while still feeling sort of
fresher feel.
Yeah, fresher feel of like, yeah, okay, we know this dude is Zeus, and that means there's probably a Hermes, and you know, there's probably a Poseidon. Like you've seen it so many times that it's a little rough. But maybe yeah. Future things. I'm guessing, and not super clued into how Moon Knight works, I'm guessing this is all pretty, you know, in line with the comic book, which is of an era where Egyptian stuff would have been sort of less tropey. Not to say it hasn't been. You know, certainly there's movies for you know, decades and decades of Hollywood, but I mean, like in modern media, sort of thing. Or, there's even more so, like I said, like the Brendan Fraser films, the Universal universe that they tried to create with the Universal monsters, starting with the Mummy with Tom Cruise and etc.
Well, even Indiana Jones for that matter, because the first Indiana Jones, he's looking for the Lost Ark, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sort of thing, yeah. And using the sort of, I mean, they're digging through pyramids and stuff like that to find the stuff. But yeah, it's, you know, anyway.
Yeah.
It's funny how archaeology always ends up back in Egypt, but I guess that's because it's one of the older places in the world that we know of, right?
For Western sort of culture, it sort of fits. You know, I think you could change things up going with Eastern or African culture, or heck, what about the native cultures of like New Zealand, some Maori stuff?
True. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or the Incas and the Mayans. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, let's see. I wonder what the Red Queen's going to be up to. It was kind of a, coming back to Picard, it was kind of a, like a soft ending, right? Because we don't, it's almost like a to be continued because Picard is still under.
Right.
And, you know, next week we're going to get the Fantastic Voyage where, you know, they shrink the scientists down and inject them with a hypodermic into the dying person, right? You ever see the movie Fantastic Voyage?
I'm pretty sure I have, but you know what I've actually seen in that same vein is, I want to say it's called Inner Space with Martin Short, where they shrink a guy down.
Yeah.
and they have a bad guy go in there too. So
yeah, same idea. Right. Sure. I love that. It was Irwin Allen, which he did. Irwin Allen did the Lost in Space stuff. And so he was big into sort of sci-fi stuff. And, you know, I think Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea was one of his shows as well, and a lot of model work and stuff like that. So they had this little spaceship, and of course they had Raquel Welch. She was the eye candy, right? The original Seven of Nine, if you want to call her that. And you know, they had Donald Pleasance, you know, the guy from Nightmare on from Michael Myers. He was the doctor, and they had to. There was a CIA agent who was in a coma, and they had to go and, you know, save him, sort of thing. So they put these, and I think it was a story by Asimov or maybe Arthur C. Clarke. But anyway, so they have this giant, you know, like 6-foot hypodermic needle, and they shrink the ship down to like, you know, like a model, like a toy model sort of size. And then they drop it into the needle, and it sort of floats down into the water. And then they put this plunger in, and then they shrink the hypodermic down with this ray, you know, kind of thing, right? And then they take the hypodermic and they inject it into the sky, and then that's how it's like, you know, they're flowing, they're driving through the bloodstream, and there's all these like white corpuscles chasing them, and you know, all the red cells and that kind of stuff, and they go into the lungs, and I think they have to go through the heart, and they have to avoid the valves opening and closing. It's really kind of cool, and they end up in the brain where they have to do brain surgery with a laser. Meanwhile, you know, the body's defense systems are like attacking them, sort of thing, right?
It's definitely such a iconic thing that there's modern media that references it, right? There's a Rick and Morty episode that references it. There's an Archer episode that references it.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that even the scene with the Minox on was it the second one, Empire Strikes Back, where they get stuck inside the planet and they're hiding from and they end up with the Minox, and they're walking around and they're like, this is really kind of soft earth. And
why is it so wet? Turns out it's moist.
Yeah, it's moist. It ends up being, they end up upsetting the creature, and he spits them out, right? Sort of thing.
Yeah.
So that's all, it's all based on this same story. Cool. All right, let's move on to the watch list. So I don't know if you have heard of Slow Dogs. It's appeared on Apple TV, I guess, 2 weeks ago, because there was 2 episodes up this week when I went to look for it. Stars Gary Oldman as this grumpy MI5, you know, has-been director kind of thing. And we have, you know, the young hero and a team of washed out MI5 agents, right? Like in the very beginning, the main character totally screws up. I mean, he doesn't screw up this hostage scene, but it turned out it was like a Kobayashi Maru kind of thing. It wasn't real, but he ended up actually hurting real people and trying to get through this situation, this test. And because he got the signals wrong, like it starts off with he's supposed to follow a guy with a a white shirt with a blue t-shirt underneath, and he ended up chasing a guy with a white t-shirt and a blue outfit on the overtop. But he got the wrong suspect kind of thing. Anyway, but they end up in this place, and it's slow as an slough is the district that the center is in, and they're away eventually, or Regent Park is where the main MI5 office is, like the one that you see in James Bond and stuff like that, right? And these guys are off in like the suburbs, and this you know, they're sent there just because they're all screw ups kind of thing, right? And Gary Oldman's great, like, but I'm getting the sense after watching two episodes that he actually was a really, really good good agent. And we start to find out in the second episode that they're actually sent assignments to investigate Regent Park itself. And the reason why they're out on the outskirts is because they've got that sort of latitude to be able to go in and inspect these, you know, to do investigations. They're sort of like internal revenue, but internal. What do they call it when the cops are inspecting themselves, sort of thing?
Internal affairs.
Internal affairs. Yeah. So this is like external affairs, if you want to call it that, right? Sort of thing. So there's some sort of subplot going on, and Gary Oldman's like trying to discourage this young guy from exploring it. I kind of get the sense that he's discouraging from doing it, so that knowing that the kid will go off and do it, you know, sort of thing. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah. So really interesting show. So it's, you know, that sort of spy crafty kind of, you know, show. So, and yeah, like I said, I think it's only like, 6 or 8 episodes long. It's another British show, so it's pretty cool. And that's my pick for the watch list this week. And what do you got for us?
I've got The Dropout. I see it on Hulu here in the States, I believe.
It's on Disney here in Canada.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Disney Plus through Star, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Yep.
Good. So you're not left out. This is a dramatic series based on the Dropout podcast from ABC News that covers Elizabeth Holmes and the Theranos whole kerfuffle. It's pretty good. So the final episode is today, actually, 8 episodes. And it is one of those things that I followed along with the podcast, which has continued on, actually, as the original podcast ended with the, I think it was like 6 episode podcast, The Dropout ended with, you know, she's definitely going to go on trial. And then they had subsequent sort of other episodes covering the trial, including the conviction of Elizabeth Holmes. So I guess that's semi-spoilers, but it's more, even knowing the end, it's more about like the journey there, like seeing the smaller, you know, smaller lies become larger fraud sort of thing is done pretty well. It is definitely a show that if you're like me, you'll watch and be enraged and say, how could somebody have gotten away with this sort of stuff? And maybe that's a test.
Is it a true story?
It is based, I mean, it's dramatized, right? But it is the based on the true story of like what was dug up from that that investigative podcast around Elizabeth Holmes, Sonny Balwani, and a whole bunch of other players involved with the Theranos blood testing company, right? If folks don't remember, it was like, the idea you would, you know, instead of doing a whole bunch of blood draws to get all of these different blood tests done to do, you know, medical work, you could have just like a little pinprick at like your local Walgreens, and they would run, you know, a couple hundred different tests, and they got all sorts of money. They had this like sort of superstar sort of investor and board set up, and they really didn't meet any of that stuff. And it's safe to say now, because of the conviction, like it was pretty much all a fraud. And it is kind of interesting to see how, if folks don't remember, there was a very strong period of time where Elizabeth Holmes was doing a Steve Jobs-esque sort of look, like a black turtleneck sort of a look.
Oh yeah.
And she was on covers of like, this might be the next Steve Jobs, right? And people really wanted this, you know, young, attractive blonde to be the next big thing in tech. And she was for a period of time.
Hmm. Wow. Yes, you're here on Wikipedia.
Yeah, I recommend it. Even if you're not familiar with you know, the dirty backstory. I think they do a pretty good job of explaining what's going on there. Like, you get to see what happens.
So these kind of podcasts where they do like there was there's been a few sort of investigative murder kind of mystery solving mystery sort of things. Mm-hmm. Like on these, have you listened to a lot of those podcasts where they're sort of episodic?
You know, I haven't. I've been sort of adjacent. Like the closest I've been is, you know, like Tiger King is not a podcast, but
yeah,
it fits that same mold. Also not a podcast, but Making a Murderer fits in that same mold.
Hmm.
I am aware of
so
Serial.
Tiger King is like Tiger King is a series of Netflix shows or just one show?
Tiger King is story. Well, it gets complicated because there's multiple seasons and there's multiple spin-off stuff, but it is a documentary style series on Netflix that essentially plays out like the investigative podcast sort of thing.
Is it real? Like, again, based on real people?
Yeah, you remember Tiger King with Joe Exotic and stuff, from like really early on the pandemic. It was the mega show everybody was watching with the guy with
the
tigers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I didn't watch it, though. Yeah, didn't watch it.
Oh, you didn't watch it? Okay, so you somehow didn't get swept up in the fever.
No.
If you're not into that, you might
but
be
I do. I do remember the fever. I do remember all the buzz about it, right?
Yeah. Making a Murderer was on Netflix. A similar kind of thing where, you know, it is this investigative journalism style of documentary.
Is it like the Don't Mess With Cats one too? Or?
You know, I never did see that one, Tim. You did recommend them. And I have not got, there's so much content. I have not gotten around to that one. But yeah, you know, Serial. Well, I think Serial is one that people know. I've not listened to that one myself.
Yeah, Serial. That's what I'm thinking of. Yeah. I can't remember the name of it. Yeah. Yeah.
Only Murders in the Building is kind of based on that whole sort of fandom.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're based on the fandom of listening to these kind of podcasts. Yeah, I'm just curious about the format of the podcast, right? So, different things you could do. Cool. All right, well, I guess that's it for another week. So, hey, hi, if people want to get in touch with you, where do they find you?
I'm on Twitter as @DevOfTheHair.
All right, my name is Tim Mitra, TimMitra, on the Twitter machine is where you'll find me. So, until next time, we'll see you in the future. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Spotcast Podcast. If you want to find out more about the podcast or see the episode show notes, visit the Spotcast website at spotcast.com. You can get in touch with us on the website or follow us on Twitter at Spotcast. If you have feedback or questions, send us a tweet with the hashtag AskSpotcast. If you like the show, please consider recommending us to a friend, writing a review on iTunes, or pledging any amount at patreon.com/Spotcast. You can find details on how to help us on our website, spotcast.com/sponsor us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the future.
I think another one that could be like a shadow pick, kind of in line with the Dropout, is I'm watching, and I think it ends next week or the week after, The Thing About Pam, which stars Renee Zellweger.
Yeah, that's on ABC here, I think, right?
Yeah.
Where is it on? Where are you watching it?
So, because I use YouTube TV, it literally doesn't matter what channel it's on, because I just record the content, but I think it might be NBC. I think it's an NBC property, but you know, I've got banner blindness when it comes to what's the little logo that shows in the lower right hand corner.
Don't know. On YouTube?
Well, YouTube TV, which is basically, this is showing Peacock and NBC. So it's an NBC property. So it is a drama, dramatization of what started as basically like a podcast series.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, about this lady who, I mean, I guess we'll find out, but like she is seemingly involved in a lot of crimes. And when you watch this series, right, similar to the Dropout with Elizabeth Holmes, if you're like me, you'll be absolutely enraged the entire time. Like, how did this happen? How did this person get away with this? How were there so many other people helping along with this? And it's a brilliant portrayal by Renee Zellweger. My significant other started watching a few I don't know, like YouTube documentaries or, you know, they were recordings of yeah. like the real person talking. I'm like, yeah, it looks a lot like this person. Sounds a lot like the person. It's a pretty bang up portrayal.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, I gotta go and relax before bedtime for Bonzo, and you probably have to go watch some more Dropout or whatever.
Yeah, I've got the Dropout to watch. I've got the last half hour of Halo to watch. I didn't get time to finish that before, since I was focused on Picard and stuff.
Yeah, I saw something funny about, I got an email from, or I was on Roger's site paying my phone bill today, and they said, I saw a note there saying, if you had Paramount Channel before, you know, you have to change the way you're doing it now. I'm like, what? I didn't even realize we had Paramount Channel through our Rogers package. You know, apparently you could have bought a package through Rogers, but they've changed the way that works now. So
I feel like I get notifications or things I do not care about and then miss out on things like that I should hypothetically be notified about. Like I was tinkering with my YouTube TV stuff today, my settings. And I realized, hey, mm-hmm. there's like five channels that I don't even see, and they're available to me. Yeah. All I have to do is just check this little box to make them available.
Yeah.
I was like, why not? I mean, I'm already paying for it. And in this case, I was looking to plop down some cash for MLB.TV, the season pass, for watching baseball here.
Mm-hmm.
Which, cool. while digging through, how do I give you my money? Normally, yeah. you would keep popping this stuff up and annoying me just like last year. And this year, when I actually do want to pay for baseball, of course, you're nowhere to be found. Where's your ads?
Yeah. I wonder if I could get a bike instead of a treadmill. I've been using a treadmill to walk for my exercise thing, my exercise routine. But I'm seeing a bike here that's offered for $200. It's like, almost looks like a 10 speed, you know? Doing the, do they have brains in these things? 49-pound wheel, whatever that does for me. Leather pad. No. Like the thing, the treadmill I have has Bluetooth in it, right? So it talks to my phone.
Mm.
Really bad Chinese app, though.
Yep. That's sort of the weakest link for a lot of the IoT stuff. You'd be like, oh, here's this cool thing. Yep. How do you connect? Oh, it uses this garbage app. I'm like, why? Why? This is why we needed all of, and I know we talked about this in MTJC. That's why we needed Apple and Amazon and Google to get together and be like, here is the standard. And then we should just be using some nice app through one of those providers. And you know, they're calling the APIs, not whatever, you know, the cheapest vendor could possibly create.
Yeah.
From a Xeroxed copy of a fax of a printed out PDF that was passed around. Sort of thing. Mm. Specs. Yeah.
Yeah. Alrighty. Talk to you later.
All right. Talk to you later.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.